All right, this is the second hour, December 15th, afternoon lectures. This hour we're taking up even further the information on cases which are 2, 3, 4, 5 cases. And we must cover now spaciation as a process. This process applies very, very intimately, very, very closely, and quite precisely to three down. The three case establishes by holding a point whether or not that point can be held stably. If that point can be held stably, then all one does is just carry right on with his technique known as spaciation, as given right here, and springs his free prayer. The process known as spaciation has as its first step the establishment of a point and the maintenance of that point in a constant location in space in the vicinity of the free prayer. After the point has been established, and by the way, if it is simply held, even though it flickers, it will rapidly, this is for later stage cases, even if it flickers, it will rapidly assume a constancy because all the things making it flicker tend to go right on off the case. And so we have a condition here of how well can one hold a point. Now, with a step three, he's got to be able to hold that point. And later on, how well can one hold a point, and how well one can hold one is remedied by, of course, simply holding one. And by exaggerating the things which it tries to do, and then minimizing the things that it tries to do, and applying a cycle of action to that point. This point sits there and it starts to shimmer. The pre-clear can't stop it from shimmering. Well, now that's what's wrong with your pre-clear. He's been trying to stop an action. Any time in any process, and this particularly pertinent to psychosomatics, a pre-clear has consistently and continued, tried not to have the pain of something, has tried to stop a motion, has tried to stop an action. He is on a single flow. And as we know, a single flow or a single effort will lock. Of course, then, if a man tries to stop the ringing in his ears for years, or tries to stop the pain in a knee for years, or tries to stop himself from seeing blurredly for years, or tries to stop himself from stuttering for years, or even for months, he has built up one flow that is tended towards stop, and the condition will spring. All you have to do is demonstrate to him that he can start it. And having started it, you then increase it. And having increased it, then you decrease it. And that works with any chronic somatic. And if you're going to address a chronic somatic exactly, you can knock the thing flat very swiftly simply by exaggerating its condition and then minimizing its condition until the pre-clear realizes that he is actually in control of it. What he has tried to do is back up from it. He has tried to retreat from it. And his consistency of retreat has established a one-way flow, which, of course, has stuck and has latched him up in a situation where he cannot get rid of his condition. He's holding on to it desperately. That fellow who is trying to desert his body for many, many years, or even centuries, has tried to desert bodies and get away from bodies, has, of course, set up a one-way condition whereby he's trying to desert bodies. This is reversed very, very simply, solely by making him try to take possession of his body. And he will argue madly, by the way, when you first, the first moment you start to give him, you start to tell him, now, all right, let's take possession of this body. No, he's got a lot of other reasons. You say, all right, now let's take possession of just your right ear, that's all. All we want, just your right ear. Oh, no. You'll find out that he is stuck on a one-way flow which says, get away with the body, get away from it. He's got to be able to use it 100%, use it, abuse it, do anything to it before he's actually free of it. Because as long as the body is antipathetic to him, it controls him. He must be in a complete state of disregard of the body, actually, in order to be a good, solid, faded quitter. All right. Any time, then, that an individual is in a condition of backup or stop on anything, you as an auditor have only to reverse and exaggerate the action. Let's take this point. This point could be a ringing in the ear, a bad knee, bad eyes, anything. We follow pretty well the same process. We put it into a cycle of action and then put the cycle of action under the control of the preclear. Simple. There's really nothing to it. For instance, somebody feels terrific degradation. You just make him feel a lot more degraded. He feels like he can't be proud of himself. Okay, let's just exaggerate the condition. Let's just exaggerate the dickens out of this condition. Let's get him feeling that he's old and an old tramp in terrible ragged clothes and he's starving and diseased and he's crawling around along a snow covered countryside and being driven with pitchforks away from every place. And he says, well, can't be this bad decadent. Exaggerate the condition which is feared. That which one fears, one will acquire. Because he's trying to back up from it, and his backing up from it, of course, brings it to him. You back up from something in this universe by its laws of flows. By its laws of flows, this condition will result in his having it. Now, you know those having and agreeing and so forth. Well, if he tries to disagree with something, what does it do? It'll agree with him and stay with him. That's a horrible condition. I mean, it's the booby trap, the messed universe size. But that is the condition in which he will find himself. So he's tried to back up from a condition, the only way out is through. So if you start him through, and he's willing to live and use this body and do anything with it, all of a sudden you'll say, I'm talking about getting out of this body. The first thing it'll be, he'll be wondering, you know, I should wonder that this body doesn't try to get away from me. And the next thing you know, why? He'll be walking down the street one day and he's liable to keep right on walking and say, I forgot my body, just a minute. Go back and pick it up. The way out is the way through. Now let's look at this point. All these conditions are the same as this point condition. You put up this point. All right, the point shimmers. The point wobbles. A lot of facsimiles start pouring out. Any one of those conditions I gave you about that point can start occurring. How do you remedy it? Well, you let this point shimmer. Only you make it really shimmer. Now, let's make it shimmer some more. And the fellow says, I can't control it to that degree because the second I try to make it shimmer, it starts rushing off and going in random motions all over the room. Zing, zing, boom, boom. And you say, all right, each time it comes anywhere close to you, give it a push and change its course. That's all. Just once in a while, change its course. Let it go very random, and then change its course once in a while with a push. Doesn't matter how random it's going or how seldom you change it. Just once in a while, punch it. That point will tame right down, all of a sudden remain in one place. All right, let's say the second that he stops this point, he gets facsimiles of people rushing in from all directions or doing something of the sort, and they start pushing the point around, and they start interfering with him, and jumping on the point, and riding the point, and changing the point to something else, and doing it this, and doing it that. You just make him get more people, and have him change it more often, and have him push it more places, and have it go in a more random situation. And if he can't even control it to that degree, and this condition still occurs, have him once in a while slide in somebody new. that manhandles it. Let's have him slide in a gremlin, or slide in a point changer, making the umpire in all this chaos, and have him slide in this point changer and have the point changer give it a whip, too. And that point will calm right on down into his kill. Now, you have this happen faster, you make him increase it, and then you have him decrease it. Whatever action is going on, make him increase it, and then make him decrease it slightly. And make him occasionally come under the realization that he is, to some slight degree, controlling this thing. No matter how arduous this is, the process, or how long it takes, you can do it. The point insists on expanding, and it goes out, and it goes long, boom, long, boom. And it's going out, and you make it go long, long, boom. That's all. Just catch it on the fly and make it do one extra one. Once in a while. Oh, you see, finally, the dickens with that. I can make it go long, boom, too. I can also just make it go boom. Now it's just sitting there. Exaggerate the condition. In other words, what am I saying then? I'm just saying apply a cycle of action to it. Start, increase, decrease, and stop. All right. So much for that point. And when I say so much for that point, I'm also at the same time saying so much for any chronic somatic or emotional condition which you run into in any preclear. Just apply a cycle of action. Increase it and decrease it and stop it and start it. Now make yourself feel worse. Now make yourself feel much worse. Now make yourself feel just gruesomely worse. All right, now that you've done that, make yourself feel a little better. Well, that's easy by this time. Want to make yourself feel worse than you did before. Good. You got much worse now. Yeah. All right. Now decrease the worseness. Now feel cheerful. Oh, you can't do that. Well, feel cautious then. Or you can feel cautious. Good. Now that you feel cautious, now feel degraded. Now feel really degraded. Feel like you couldn't hit anybody in the whole world, that you wouldn't even be able to hit a snail in the whole world. That's right. I got that feeling. Now, fix it so any snail in the world could beat you up with complete impunity. Got that? All right, that's fine. Now, fix it so that there is one small algae located in the middle of the Pacific Ocean that you could beat up if you were cautious. Now, just get that algae there, and let's be very cautious, and let's beat him up. And the fellow says, some other algae's allowed to do that. You say, all right, now have all the other algae come in and beat you up. All right, now you can beat up two algae now. And in such a condition, you can work a fellow back up, really, in an hour or two of processing. You could take Joe Lewis, for instance. Now, you would work that process. That's the process you would work on Joe Lewis. And you'd have him back in there, climbing into the ring, this big, black, glossy tiger, see, panther, climbing into the ring and looking around, and his opponent comes out of the corner. He picks up one fist, he takes one look, he takes one blow, and it's the end of the fight. Joe Lewis could do that today. You could upset every single fight, promoter, betting ring, or anything else that you wanted to do by processing Joe Lewis for as little as 5 hours. You could just ruin the whole fight game. By doing what? Exaggerating his defeatedness. And then minimizing it, and then exaggerating it, because he's gotten down to a point where force will no longer permit him to handle the force in his facsimiles. His facsimiles move in on him, and he's sitting right now in the midst of every fight he ever had. Just as a preclear is sitting in the middle of every fight with force he ever lost. He's sitting right there. 74 trillion years he's been losing fights. And you want to know how good he can get? Look how bad off he is. Now let's remember that then. Apply a cycle of action to this. He says, it does so-and-so. This is why you have to find out what it's doing. He's saying, it's doing so-and-so, and I can't handle it. It's doing so-and-so. You just either make it do more so, just bluntly, just tell him to do it more so, or occasionally introduce a new factor. In other words, change. You just increase it or you change it, and then you decrease it. No matter how tiny an amount you succeed in changing it or altering it, he can then change it a larger amount and a larger amount until the darndest things will come under somebody's control. If you were to say to a preacher who's out of his body and who couldn't even move a cigarette paper, to get how terrible it would be to move the cigarette paper, and then have the cigarette paper moving him all over the place, and get cigarette papers coming up and chasing him, and now let's get molecules out of cigarette papers chasing him. If you were to just exaggerate this disability to a point where it really degrades him, or he feels in terrible condition, degradation is actually an inability to handle force. Lack of pride because one's force is gone. Upscale, a person feels very competent. He walks into the, out to the bois in the morning, and Henri has swatted him on the cheek with a glove. He walks out in the bois, and he takes out his long rapier, and with great expertness and great glee, he goes through Henri's guard, and Henri dies very quickly under great competence. The next thing you know, this fellow is not any longer interested in killing Henri. He is afraid to be competent. Not so much because of the backlash of every time he's applied pressure, because he loses. He loses a few times, so he recognizes that his competence against Henri was competence. And what knocked him off was competence. So what's wrong with it is competence. And competence in the handling of force then must be eschewed. And if competence in the handling of the force is eschewed and abandoned, you're not supposed to have anything to do with it anymore, then, of course, you have to abandon force. Because if there's no competence with the force becomes completely random. As a net result, his competence goes by the boards, and he begins to feel how? Degraded, because he can't use force. How can you get ahead in the world? How can you dig yourself out of this universe and lift yourself up ranks and go up the line and so forth? By recovering the use of force. The guy can't use force to exaggerate his inability to use it, but the dot won't stay still. Now, you may move this point. You finally conquered the point. Now let's move it. Just a little bit. Let's move it in some other direction. Let's move it in some other direction. Change its colors. Put it behind his back. And every time he puts it behind his back, he gets another one out front. So you make him put two out front for every one he puts behind his back. Two out front. And he gets to doing this after a while, and he can't stop it. So you say, all right, now put four out front for every one you put behind your back. Put one of them behind your back and put four out front. Now this finally gets up so the whole room starts getting full of these darn things. Now he can't tell which point's which anymore. He's just getting the whole thing, and you say, well, are you willing to start over again on these points? Well, that's fine. Let's just put those off in yesterday, and let's get a new point. And he'll say, yeah, or I put that point behind your back. Okay. Now that you've got that conquered, let's build some two-dimensional space. Don't get into any big arguments with the preclear about the fact you couldn't possibly move around two-dimensional space. You can move around two-dimensional space because it's a postulated area of only two dimensions that has two or more anchor points. So we put four anchor points on this two-dimensional space, and we do things with it. First, we fit it over his body. And we put it below his body. We put it above his body. What do we use for anchor points? His body. That's the only orientation he's got. Preclear, who's in this state, is oriented in relationship to his body and to nothing else. So we put these two anchor points, and let's just routinize this thing. It doesn't have to be this way, but this is mostly because it makes preclear so angry and uncomfortable. Make him lunge back and put his hands under his head and use his two elbows as an anchor points, and make him put his big toes about a foot apart, and use those as two anchor points, and have his two-dimensional space running from those two big toes up to the points of his elbows. And when he starts to shift his elbows around and move his feet so as not to have those anchor points anymore, make him pull it back into that condition. circumstance. You get very tired of it after a while.
You get very restless.
I've never had a preacher yet who didn't get extremely restless when you made him lie in one position, restricted the freedom of motion, and made him handle something that he would much rather run away from. The way he'll run away from it is by curling up, by closing his feet together, by putting his arms down at his sides, and so forth. He just keeps running away. He doesn't want to get under this tension, because you're just about to put him under terrific tension. Ah, you take those two anchor points. His hands are behind his head, so his elbows are out there, akimbo. Not akimbo, but his elbows are sticking out. Those are two anchor points. You've got his two big toes as anchor points. I had to put some two-dimensional space between his two big toes and his elbows. When he does that, my God, coffins, deaths, all kinds of horrible things start to roll off of this case like mad. Do you pay any attention to these things? No. You just make him take this two-dimensional space and hold it. Until you can make that space lie quiet. That's the main thing that space is supposed to do. You understand? Space is supposed to do that. It is supposed to be quiet. How do you get somebody from ever having any space anymore? Make him jiggle and jitter. If you get a guy nervous enough, he wouldn't have any space anymore. But how do you get somebody nervous? By making the space which he occupies untenable. What is nervousness? Nervousness is that condition which results from having one's space as occupied made untenable. If you take some fellow and run him headlong into a tree, the tree is occupying the space he should have been occupying. And, of course, that space is untenable, so the fellow after that gets nervous about trees. This is very simple with the stuff we've been over about spaceation. We're going over this as a rote process now. You just hook those anchor points down there to the toes. Use those toes as anchor points, those elbows as anchor points, and the thing starts shifting and curling up and rippling and turning over and flying away and so forth. So you just make it shift faster. You make it fly higher. You make more people come in and interfere with it. You get more gruesome things happening because it's there. You make it roll up and unroll faster. Whatever it is doing, exaggerate it, and then each time come back and decrease that and then fix it on his body again. So he orients it. You keep that up until he can hold that two-dimensional space right there without a qualm. Now, in the process of doing this, he's going to get nervous. Particularly, his arms are going to get jumpy. His back is going to get jumpy. And his legs will get very jumpy because legs are what one uses to remove oneself from space which has become untenable. So naturally his legs will get jumpy. Now you want to know what this manifestation is called, nervous legs. You ask somebody, turn on Sonic. And the guy all of a sudden, his legs start to jerk. He can't turn on Sonic because if he really found out that he was in a space big enough to turn on Sonic, that it would be made so untenable for him so fast that he'd have to run away. So his legs are all set to run the second you ask him to turn on a sound or any perceptive. And he knows he has to have space in which to turn on energy. If he can't have any space, he can't turn on energy except to do anything but run. So his legs get very jumpy and he gets very upset. And you just keep putting that back on his body and hooking it up to his elbows, and then increasing it, and making it fly around, and do all sorts of things, and change character, and go behind him and above him, and make it worse. Any condition he reports is happening, make it worse. Until the first thing you know, he's handling two-dimensional space. Then you put the two-dimensional space below him, his body in the same position, then turn it end for end, then put it above his body, then turn it end for end, and make it stand up, and make it in various parts of the room. And finally, you'll be able to hold it very calmly, without any change, very quietly, on top of his body. He will have conquered two-dimensional space. Now, what's the value of this? You just showed him that there were anchor points which could be held stable. How do you expect a preclear to run anything or develop any energy at all if he doesn't have any anchor points? The fellow hasn't got any anchor points. Well, where could he put the energy if he doesn't have any anchor points? Everything belongs to everybody else. It doesn't belong to him. All right. Next step on spaceation is to make this piece of two-dimensional space demonstrably solid and then unsolid, to convince people it's solid and then convince them it's not solid. Just go through the routine. Now you pick up that space. Make the preacher take that space and shove his, this is not actual, this is just his figurative, arm through it, demonstrating it's not solid, and then make it solid, and figuratively hit it with his fist to make it make a sound, to demonstrate it is solid, then to make it not solid, then to make it solid, then to make it not solid, until at last he suddenly recognizes something that is the most vital thing on the whole track. How did things get to be solid? Why do you think this wall up here is solid? Now, if he's been convinced, he can convince somebody else that it is. This wall's command value over him lessens. This will upset him, by the way, because he'll feel immediately if he does that, he's liable to start making mistakes and walking through doors with his body without taking hold of doorknobs. He'll get certain that this kind of a condition would exist, that it would be very embarrassing to him. Be very embarrassing to him if he forgot to remember that his clothing was solid and walked out of him in the middle of the street. Any kind of a condition could result from this, but that's only because he is unable to control solidity and unsolidity at will. Furthermore, every time this individual's been in bad condition, been placed in bad condition, it was by a force which convinced him. And how did it convince him? By taking over the space he was occupying. One gets convinced the mesh universe exists at the moment it collides with the home universe and takes over the space of the home universe. One is then convinced of the existence of the mesh universe. More powerful space, of course. So, the solidity of space is the first step on particles. You see, there is no such thing as a particle. There's a postulate about particles. But you get solid space, you can do anything with it. It doesn't even have to be a particle. This is really senior magic. Now, any time this individual's gone through a tree, he's at it demonstrating that space could be solid. Any time he has run into a brick wall, he's decided that space could be solid. He's run into enough of them back along. Every time he has fallen and hit a planet, you know, jumped out of the second-story window or something, hit the ground, he has been demonstrated to him the planet is solid. Any one of these conditions are convictions. Of course, he had to have a higher level belief in the thing or conviction. He had to accept somebody else's evaluation in the first place to get into that condition. Or he had to sell people and fail to sell them on the solidity of his own space. If he couldn't have space that solid, then nobody else, anybody else could come along and demonstrate that their space was solid and his wasn't. So let's take a look at this situation and find out that the making of solid two-dimensional space and the unmaking of it at will is of the essence in reconvincing him on the subject of energy. So, how do we do? He rams against it, he knocks it with his knuckles, and he finds out it's impossible to go through it. Utterly impossible to go through it. Well, he says, yeah, I made it solid, but it's solid all the time. This thing has been solid from the beginning. It is a solid piece of two-dimensional space, and that's all there is to it, and I can't do anything with it. Well, that's fine. Have it much more solid. Now, get things like 16-inch guns firing into it, airplanes crashing through it, going faster than sound, and all of them just folding up and stopping when they hit this two-dimensional space. Let's really exaggerate its solidity. Let's make it hyperbolical beyond hyperbole. Let's get it so that we have huge battering rams run forward by 1,000 men, hit this space. They've got spike points on the battering ram, and it doesn't penetrate the space, and nothing penetrates. He realizes all of a sudden, saying, nothing's this solid. And he'll let something go through slightly. And after that, it's easy to break it down. And you just break it down to the point then to where you have this very small caterpillar come up with a very small hair off of his chin, and push this very small hair through the space. Demonstrator goes through, and after that, he can move through this space at will. Now, supposing he can't make it solid. Well, get it out horizontally and make it support something. Don't have it hit. Make it support something. Put on it a dust mote and have it support the dust mote and not go through. And make sure the dust mote doesn't go through. And the guy will eventually get the idea. All right, he can hang a dust mote on this. Now let's keep building it up from there until this thing can have cannonballs rested on it, until it could have a man rested on it, and until it could be hit by a 16-inch gun or have a battleship or a faster-than-sound plane hit it, and it wouldn't go through. Now, getting to change and shift, solidity, pierceability and unpierceability, enterability and unenterability of that two-dimensional piece of space. Now, once in a while, you'll find this two-dimensional piece of space gets terribly fragile. Well, if it gets fragile, just keep breaking it up. Take a piece of two-dimensional space and break it up some more, and then throw those fragments away and get another piece of two-dimensional space and break that up, and another one and break that up, and all of a sudden it'll get stronger. In other words, you toughen this space up until it is completely under its control. It's enterable or not enterable. It can move here, dispose there. Anything can be done with this that he cares to do with it. Next step. Next step is to get two such planes and enclose a space with them. Two planes. Two pieces of two-dimensional space and put them about 4 or 5 feet apart. Make a box. Big box. I don't care how big you make it, 20 feet by 10 feet by 10 feet or something like that. But get this, that box encloses the pre-clear and the pre-clear's bed. And the first thing it'll remind him of, course, is a coffin. And that is the space they've made very antipathetic to Homo sapiens. They take a guy while he's still in the head and they fill the body full of formaldehyde. And they do all sorts of gruesome things. And then they put it in this little tiny cramped box and they shove the lid down so it's completely armor-proof, seat-proof. Bill collector proof, I suppose, and bury it deep in the ground. It's just a dramatization of a control operation. There isn't any reason anybody should do this. I mean, this is nonsense beyond nonsense. Preserve a dead body. Let's go down to the slaughterhouse and every cow they kill, let's fill that cow full of formaldehyde and bury it. It just makes as much sense of people keeping this relic around with powder and paint on its face buried deep in the ground. This is odd. This is weird. I mean, how can a society go that nutty? Well, I should say much greater dignity. How does it come so extremely aberrated? Well, it just goes nuts, that's all. And on the subject of bodies. Care of the body, care of the body, care of the body. Nothing but bodies, nothing but bodies. All the space there is mess universe space. All the space there is, it can be controlled by the body. The body occupies the only space. And so, boy, right out of this, you think you're just in beautiful shape now that you've got a piece of two-dimensional space. The guy could hold a point steady. Now he can hold 8 points steady. He's got two pieces of two-dimensional space, and this makes 8 points. It makes a rectahedron. All right, here he sits, lies in this box. And the first thing you're going to get, you say, all right, let's feel all around, make sure nothing is there but your space and the wall. Now, cover them with fur or put rugs on them or something of the sort. Now, turn them end for end. Turn the walls end for end. Now, rotate them 180 degrees. Now, handle them. Now, color the walls red, color them blue, color them green. Shift it up. Higher, pull it down lower, and all the time, let the body couch. You know, don't let this guy lie on the couch and construct this thing out there somewhere on the other side of Markab. No, you are about to unmock one body and one couch. Now, he's got this base that make him reach from where he is and feel all around the floor of it. That's why it's good to have rugs on the floor and silk walls or something of the sort, so he can get a tactile on them. You make sure that's his face. Now you make him feel all around, make sure there's nothing in there but himself as a Thetan. And he'll tell you long in advance where he can actually stabilize this. Oh, no, there's nothing in here. He'll keep yapping at you. You'll just make awfully sure. Because when he gets this sensation, you can tell it will come as considerable surprise to him. It will really shock him. You'll always see this surprise. He won't just take this calmly. Because what he's actually done is make some space. And he'll suddenly realize he's made some space. And what you do is have him sit in there as a Thetan in the middle of that huge spatial area. And he reaches from one part to another, inspects all the corners, inspects all the walls, inspects the ceiling. And each time, he determines that there's nothing there but that space and himself as a Thetan. You're getting to inspect this real quickly. Now, you number the corners. You don't have to demonstrate to him. You just say, number those corners, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. I got all the corners numbered. All right. Go to corner 1. Now feel all through the place from corner 1. Now go to corner 2. Now make feel all through the place from corner 2 and make absolutely sure there's nothing in there. Get good tactile on the floor and the ceiling and the walls. Now go to corner 3 and do that. Go to corner 4 and do that. Go to corner 5 and do that. 6, 7, 8. I'll make it completely certain there's nothing in there. Probably some kind of a condition like this is going to happen. He will either find it impossible to maintain this steadily, or he won't. Other things will keep popping in there that he doesn't want. If they do, make him keep filling it up full of all kinds of impossible things. Again, exaggerate the condition, and then empty it out, and then fill it up, and then empty it out, and fill it up, and empty it out, and he's finally the dickens with it. Now, he says he can't get rid of the furniture. Furniture is too great an actuality to him. Father was a furniture dealer or something like that. Enlarge the space and start putting furniture in it. He's got one couch in it. Already had him put dozens of couches in it. Have put couches all through the thing and then take them out again. Fill up that space and empty it. Fill it up and empty it until actually he's sitting there with a complete certainty on the possession of that space. Now, he isn't going to get the complete certainty right at first that he can get. He'll think that's very peculiar because he's going to have something else sitting in that space. You can just count your bottom dollar, he'll have something else sitting in that space. And that is what's left of the home universe will be found in that space. But before he attains that, you're going to have facsimiles flying off this fellow like mad. You're going to have him dug out of this and into that and shot here and maimed there and lying someplace else dying. And these facsimiles are going to come through bobbity 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 bob. He keeps trying to tell you about these facsimiles. Well, just disregard them and go on with the space, or if they become too annoying, throw in a few more agonizing deaths into the chain. You just throw in some deaths that are a little worse on a thing. Well, get a death now where you're being disemboweled by a horse. Yeah, you've got that. Well, all right, now let the chain go on. Look at the rest of them. All right, now run in there one now where you're tied over a cannon's muzzle and it's fired. You got that. We'll let that one go on by. Now get one where you're down at the bottom of the sea. Fella keeps saying he's drowning or something. Oh, he go through agony in this sometimes. And he keeps drowning or something. Sort of. Or get one of being at the bottom of the sea and have a couple of big sharks come along and grab hold of the body and hold it still while bullet fish fly through it. You got that? He says, what's a bullet fish? And you say, it's a bullet fish. Of course, put some in. Anything. But If that gets too bad, ordinarily you can just disregard that chain of deaths. Because if you were to hold that consistently and let him look, he would see practically every past death he had rushing off of this thing. Why? He's been living since the explosion of the mess universe. Explosion of his home universe at the hands of the mess universe in borrowed space. So the second he tries to make any of his own space, all the borrowed space starts flashing at him. Every time he tried to possess space and was stopped, every failure to continue to own space is liable to show up in the space he's trying to create. So there he lies. All sorts of situations can show up there. Exaggerate the situation and decrease it, increase it, run a cycle of action on it, and keep putting that big box together there until he's finally got space, and then he's going to find somewhere in there high degree of probability that he will find the home universe. And it'll be something like the black spot over in one corner or a tiny little dot in the middle, or he'll try to go through the middle of it, and he said, every time I go through the middle of it, it feels like I'm shot or something. Or like I've just been hit by Niagara Falls. Anything along that line. And so, what do you do with this universe? If you were to ask him to put something in this rectangle after he's sure that it's absolutely empty, you would get a sour reply. He'll put something in it. You'd be mean about it, or you'd be unhappy about it. You put something in it. You'd be upset about it. You won't want to put anything in it. He'll tell you it's lonely. He'll tell you that it's no fun. He'll tell you all sorts of things. Oh, if all this is of building your own universe, if you want anything to do with it, he'll be feeling. Why? You're staring the mess universe's collapse and end right in the teeth. And it's such a major failure that he doesn't want to build the universe. He has nothing about that. So, what do? You get him to go in there? Around through that, of course, he's in this space all the time. You make him look around, make sure the place is empty, and he'll eventually find this thing somewhere in there. He won't know what it is. He won't be able to get rid of it right away. So you turn it into a gaseous mass. You change the color of the gas, you move it around the various corners, you solidify it. You just give it straight mock-up change. You keep using it, you decrease it till it occupies the whole space and decrease it down again. The fellow will begin to tell you all about his home universe if you do this. Now, you don't have to suggest home universe to him, he'll just tell you about it. That's that. And you just keep working it. Don't let him go into large details about the thing. He'll start wondering how on earth. By the way, you needn't tip him off to this degree unless he's just too wild on the thing. He's wasting too much time as to how his home universe got that way and what happened to it. He'll tell you all sorts of stories because the fact of the matter is that the loss of it, we'll cover that in the next hour, what loss is, and a little more of the anatomy of loss so you can see how this thing works out, made him forget it. And he's forgotten it. And he's forgotten it with a vim, because that was the biggest loss he ever had. That was his, and all of a sudden, wham. What happened was, evidently, the mess universe just came over and took it over. It just took it over. And it ran into it or fell on top of it, because this universe is expanding. It keeps hitting these things, and so on. And it got on the wrong wavelength, or something happened, and he suffered this, and the next thing he knew, really, this is what happened, it went out, and he came in. He didn't have much of an entrance point or anything else. He just found himself there one day. He didn't know where he was, and he didn't know what was happening, and he might have had some strange adventures and so forth, but after that, he was a homeless waif, because he never found out what happened to him, and that's where your people are lost on a time frame. They're lost because they don't have any space. Very simple. All right. We change and alter this mass that he can't get rid of called the home universe until he's perfectly satisfied about the whole thing. And then and there, he will discover that space is his. And you find out that space is his? That is his space? He can do as he likes with that space. He'll find out something very strange. The mock-ups that he puts in that space appear and disappear with such ease compared to the mock-ups he puts out in the Mest Universe space. He's been putting up mock-ups, let's say, rather poorly. They've been shimmery, they've been thin, all that sort of thing. After you've done, and this process is known as aspaceation, after he's done his spaceation, in that space, mock-ups can appear, disappear, be, dang, beautiful. He can move them, change them, put them on automatic, take them off automatic, so on. He'll find himself able to handle them in his own space. Is this space actually his own space? If he has done this sufficiently, and if he has done this well enough, he actually has parted company with Mest Universe space. It is his own space. You've got a certainty of dimension which is not coincident with Mest Universe dimension. Therefore, Mest Universe could not override that space. Now, you could go far enough in this direction to where he could be so expert in creating space and unmocking that he could go out and look at an automobile and there wouldn't be any automobile anywhere. For anybody. At first, these spaces just disappear for himself. It won't occur to him that his body might disappear or blow up or something as he's doing this. He probably won't think of it. If he does think of it, don't worry about it. I've done this to quite a few people and expected in the early ones that we would suddenly have somebody turn up missing on our hands, but nobody did. Preclair continued to remain visible to me on the couch. But sometimes would get kind of thin. He kind of starts seeing through them a little bit. Not Plato-wise. I mean, they just sort of look kind of thin and unsubstantial. Now, they're liable to take off from that and go racing right on down the time track to present time on convictions. What they've been convinced of. What the game they're trying to play. That sort of thing. And if they're capable of seeing energy areas on themselves, they will see all sorts of energy areas on themselves. It will surprise the dickens out of them. How many energy deposits are conviction? They've been convinced they ought to play a game. They should play the game, all right? How do you play the game? Well, you play the game so that when you walk along here and you're hit by this, you say, I'm hurt. Well, I'm not hurt. Well, they say, well, you walk along there, and when you're hurt, you say, well, I'm hurt. And that's the game on this. And then I walk along here, and I say, I'm hurt, and I'm hurt. And the fellow says, but I'm not hurt. Well, you just, this is just the rules. That's the way you play this game. Well, it's a game. That's all right. Most idiotic thing. You make a hole. There's a hole there, and there's something in it. And the fellow goes into it to find out there's anything in it. He doesn't find anything in it, so he takes things out of it. You know, he makes up things, and people say, well, no, that isn't what it is. No, that isn't what it is. No, that's what it is. Well, they just invalidate the heck out of a guy like that. So, each is asking to be convinced continually, and any time he can find several people to agree with him, he'll be convinced on something or other, and he's being invalidated continually, and the major ones are done by force, and both of them depend on the banishment of space, really. Banishment of the concept of how much space one can occupy. When you've taken your space from the mass universe, you have taken spurious or specious space. It isn't real space for you because it's not your dimension. You borrowed some other dimension, and that's about the most serious thing you could do is to take a dimension that is not of your own determination. And after that, you have difficulty with energy because you can't put mock-ups in space which isn't yours, and you know the space isn't yours, and so therefore you can't put mock-ups in it. If you can't put mock-ups in it, that means you can't put energy in it. Now, you can get practiced enough on this so you can simply turn around and put in mesh universe space energy. You can get to a point where you string a little thread of energy between two cans, E-meter cans, and the E-meter. Anybody done that since I mentioned that? Did it work?
Well, I suppose I just regular.
Oh, did you get just a little twist on it? Yeah. But you have to put a pretty good, be pretty good at straining beams. And you got to put a pretty solid beam between the two of them and just let it sit there for a moment. You'll get interesting results on the meter. I'm fixing a meter up to that. The point is, then, that you are rehabilitating space for this frequency. Now, this process called spaceation will spring somebody with great ease. After he's unmocked the body a few times, he has had facility in creation of space and so on, moving in and out of the head and being where he wants to be. And the mesh universe becomes very easy to him. Now, your step one case can go right straight ahead on his route and go ahead and do this. But believe me, your step one case should be put through a complete spaceation before you consider him an operating Thetan. You just take him from there on up with a spaceation. He becomes more or less an operating Thetan rather than a Theta coil. But he gets very able. He's not too bad off, your step one case. These other people, you'll find out on lower step cases that you just push them through a spaceation anyhow and sometimes have to before you can do a darn thing with them. Actually, in view of the fact that space is beingness, you have to be able to handle space before the pre-clear can be anything. So it's a good thing to do to put, as you go through this process, to be very careful about that particular setup. Now we'll put that as a three level. The reason we leave one and two as they are, without stressing spaceation to any great degree, is because you can completely alter the beingness of a man, his condition, and so forth, by steps one and two. Without any spaceation or anything else, you just don't be 2 feet back of your head, or push yourself out with an energy beam. And when that guy has had that done, when this has occurred, you'll see facial changes and personality changes of considerable magnitude. And when these changes have occurred, they are very worth just striking for, just as their own, because it'll happen in more than 50% of your people. Much more than 50% if you use step one and two, they'll simply be outside and will go through these paces, and they can be brought up to a stability without spaceation. Now, you'd be surprised. It just changes the fellow. Changes him very markedly to have this happen to him. But by the time you've got to step three, they hold that space point steady and so forth. There's just enough little buggy things wrong with them that they can't quite do step one and two. Well, if you do the space station on the three case, he'll move right up into a one category case and you just go on with step one. Only when you've got him stabilized and outside and able to lift his various arms and limbs and so forth from the exterior, as the one does, you've got an operating Thetan. And you've got your other jump because he can make his own space. All right. Spaceation, then, is a process of rehabilitating space by first ownership and stabilization of a point, then ownership and stabilization of more than one point, namely four points, and ownership and stabilization of a two-dimensional plane hinged on those four points, and then ownership and stabilization of two such planes, and then ownership and stabilization of a rectahedron, because tetrahedron, A tetrahedron is 4 points. It's a tetrahedron, isn't it? No, it's actually a rectangle. It's a rectangle. Is that a tetrahedron? Mm-hmm. I haven't done any solid geometry in a long time. In English, that is. Well, anyway, you build that, and that stabilizes into his own space. And we have the essential breakdown, the essential points of space, the essential ingredients, the characteristics of space, which are anchor points, two dimensions, and three dimensions, and you have the most elementary space there is. And when he has claimed this completely as his space, you will find him able to do a great many things which he was not able to do before. All right? There is no substitute for a rehabilitation of space to return to an individual, a rehabilitation of his beingness. But don't think because he's done this indifferently or suddenly or quickly or snappily and then stepped out of his head and so forth that he can create space worth a darn. I mean, he's able to go through these steps, maybe, but if you haven't done a very good job, and if he can't do it the next time easily, and if he can't do it for about 4 or 5 consecutive times easily, so forth, he's not stable on the subject. So the next time you get a hold of this preclear, you put him right straight through all the steps of the spaceation, which are establish 1 point, establish 4 points, establish 8 points, and establish its emptiness. And you finally will find him quite stable. Otherwise, you're liable to unstabilizing. You put him through a space station once, you get it indifferently well, and all you've succeeded in doing is throwing him through 565 past deaths or some darn cool thing like that, or run him up against the mess of the old home universe, and you've charged him up to a fairy along. Bad deal, strictly. Okay. How much you got left on that thing? Now, that's quite sufficient for me to tell you a very important datum about all this. Loss is loss of space. As its most important loss point. Loss of space. So anywhere down along the line, what kind of mock-up do you favor for any case from 3 down? What kind of mock-up? You take the most beloved living place in the current lifetime of your pre-clear and do standard mock-up manufacture and shifting with it. Even if he does it poorly, making many of them, changing it, altering it, lessening the quantity, increasing the quantity, placing behind the back and afar and forth, above and around. Until your preclear does not give a 2 whoops and a continental about it, and can handle it with great ease, because there he is still tied with this lifetime's anchor points. And that will be usually his childhood home. And more locks will fly off of this. You'll be amazed. All locks will fly off of it in all directions. But you've rehabilitated his space considerably when you've done this. And don't be surprised when other houses like it start to show up automatically. Of course, you're just peeling the track. All kinds of things will show up as marked out mess universe space, which he has tried to claim. And in view of the fact that that was mess universe space with imposed mess universe dimensions, it, of course, was not under the good control of the preclear. A preclear can afford to lose anything he has as long as he does not lose as well as his ability to create. But when anything is based upon the speciousness of mess universe anchor points, of course, he is anxious about it in the first place, and then when he loses it, the mess universe has to be waited on for the mess universe to give him permission to have more anchor points. So you start handling that childhood home. You want to know what happens to a PC's childhood. Why is a PC's childhood polluted? Well, a PC's childhood is polluted because, one, he was moving faster when he was a child than he's moving now. And therefore, in order to pick up facsimiles of childhood, he'd have to generate and move a lot faster as a preclear. And that also applies to why can't he pick up early track as easily as he can pick up later track. And that's because he's moving too fast and too strongly on the early track for him to have, for him to pick it up now. He hasn't got enough speed. You see, we're going through a slowdown process as one goes down the cycle, so we can't get these things earlier very easily. Mostly because of speed. So in childhood, however, that's one reason, and the other reason is these anchor points. And because childhood is studded with loss from one end to the other, there is more loss per square inch of havingness in childhood because one attaches such enormous importance to the trivia. Everything is given to one. Everything is assigned and owned in some other fashion. One's toys, he has to be very careful. You just think for a moment and just try to remember a toy you had when you were a child. Just one toy. If you remembered a toy, the toy which you remembered was a toy which you were given and which was not interfered with very much. Nobody cared enough about the toy except you. That was one toy. Now, your havingness then was slight, and your space compared to your size was pretty large, but you got nailed down, nest universe anchor points had been assigned to you. And if you were racketed around much, and you were changed from home to home and area to area, just anchor points and anchor points and anchor points and anchor points, and the guy just all snarls up all over the place. Sooner or later, as an adult, one time too often, I'm going to cover for get and remember in the next hour. And one time too often, he loses a set of anchor points, and it's too much for him. And the whole track actually will jam right at that point. Jam. He will at that moment run out of space for his facsimiles. He hasn't even got space for his facsimiles anymore. And having no space for them, of course, the only space left to them, he's not going to part with them. They just simply move in on him, crash. He's got them. That's that. An electric shock. Moves one out of his last efforts to maintain anything like space. The last efforts to maintain space are psychotic or neurotic because one is saying, I'm not responsible for anything and therefore it's all right to leave me in this space. I've abandoned all responsibility for all force and I'll do whatever you say and I can still have some space, can't I? I'm still permitted to have some space. You see, I'm nutty. I can't do any wrong. Can't harm you very much. And that's just a protest. That's the last shreds of beingness. Complete irresponsibility. All right? So they just move him out of that into utter abandonment. They move him out of that into death. And they do that very simply. And, or they collapse the track on them. And that, of course, prevents them from moving out of any place. They have to stay there. It's a forcing mechanism. It is about as sensible as, well, these things are very sensible. About as sensible as anything else in this universe. We have a profession that pretends to heal, and it destroys. No wonder, you see, that somebody believes great evil of you as a Scientologist. You get out practicing for a little while, they'll believe great evil of you. The reason why? You're obviously doing good. So obviously, you must be evil. Reasonable. Follow? The fellow can't move around anymore, and if he's all pinned down and he's very upset and he hasn't got any place to go. Well, let's take what's left of him, his body, and let's fill it up full of electricity, which is highly antipathetic to him, and fix it up so he can't even be there, and then explain to everybody that this makes him well. You see? Sort of a snide, pompous expression on one's face. Great stuff. Force, and the application of force to the individual is primarily a question of changing space for him, making him abandon a piece of space. The highest level of conviction there is to knock hell out of him. That convinces him. Of course, way up above that, he had to have better conviction in field of reason. So knowingness is upset by force. Force crashes into the individual and it upsets his space, it'll upset his knowingness. Why? Because something occupies the space which he should have been occupying, makes it impossible for him to occupy that space. And if he's unable to create more space at will, then of course he considers that he has been displaced from the space. And in spaciation, you're teaching him that he can make any kind of space that he wants to make at any time he wants to make it. When he's done it a little more often, a little more often, a little more often, he finally realizes that he has all the space anybody can need in which to do anything. And he finally doesn't worry anymore about having to have space where the body is. The process of spaciation, of course, follows that because the body is in that quadrilateral, octilateral, whatever it is. Because the body is in that blown-up coffin, it gets unmocked. And you never ask him to unmock his body at all. It just disappears. He pointed out to him afterwards his body wasn't there. He said, "That's right, the body isn't there. Well, why does the body have to be there now? Why don't you just move out 2 feet behind your back?" Okay, let's take a break.